Be sure to listen to the Church at Kaweah every Saturday and Sunday at 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. Pacific Time. The Church at Kaweah is a Lordship Church under the sole authority of Jesus Christ. You may contact the Church at Kaweah by calling 559-561-4860. That's 559-561-4860. And let them know how much you're being blessed. Thank you.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Yesterday before the Supreme Court. Basically, the Supreme Court yesterday eliminated private property rights in this country. They told you that you have absolutely no right to your land and to your home. You're not secure in your persons and your property anymore. And the response from the public? This is the June 24, 2005 edition of American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks. Welcome to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. As we have been dealt a major, major, major blow to our liberty and our private property, which are really one and the same. Without private property, you have no liberty. That's the bottom line. And I'm just blown away at the response, the lack. There should be rioting in the streets right now. There should be anger from every person in America. There should be protests at every public building in the land. I mean, people, if you don't take a stand for your liberty, as far as your private property rights, this is a major, major blow. And from what I could see, the press got it right yesterday. They actually, for once, reported it. Here's how CBS said it.
The U.S. Supreme Court today affirmed the power of local governments to seize private property. In a 5-4 ruling, the court said governments may take private property even for private development as long as the project is for the public good. Wyatt Andrews has our report on that.
In a classic case of fighting City Hall, Suzette Kelo has refused to sell her home to the city of New London, Connecticut. The city wants to turn her neighborhood into a posh waterfront development. But Suzette, when she spoke to CBS News in February, was asking the Supreme Court to uphold her property rights.
We have a beautiful home. It's paid for, and we want to stay here.
Now, Suzette and many other property owners have lost. The Supreme Court, with Justice Stevens writing for the majority, ruled that the redevelopment plan, because it promises new jobs and increased tax revenues, unquestionably serves a public purpose. It's the court's first ruling that taking a property for increased public taxes satisfies the constitutional ban on takings except for public use, like bridges, hospitals, or schools.
this case was not some type of a land grab.
Across America, city officials, desperate to increase their tax revenues, were elated.
This is a great day for the citizens who live in cities that are economically depressed.
Yes,
but
sure
Justice O'Connor, in a withering dissent, said the ruling puts every home and all private property at risk. Nothing stops the state, she wrote, from replacing any Motel 6 with a Ritz-Carlton, any home with a shopping mall, or any farm with a factory.
For property rights advocates, there is one silver lining. This ruling only sets a federal standard. That means owners can still strongly protest a property taking, but in state court. Wyatt Andrews, CBS News at the Supreme Court.
Well, I wouldn't be overwhelmingly confident about any court doing the right thing. Just ask the Schiavo, or ask the Schindler family if they could trust the courts. But this just blows me away, folks. Yesterday was a very bad day for America. June 23rd, 2005 will go down in history as the day we lost our private property rights. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, in her dissent, she quoted Justice Chase over two centuries ago when he wrote, just after the Bill of Rights was ratified, he said, "An act of legislature, for I cannot call it a law," he said, "contrary to the great first principles of the social compact, cannot be considered a rightful exercise of legislative authority. A few instances will suffice to explain what I mean. A law that takes property from A and gives it to B, it is against all reason and justice for a people to entrust a legislature with such powers, and therefore it cannot be presumed that they have done it." That's his opinion about the Fifth Amendment. Now, Sandra Day O'Connor writes, "Today the court abandons this long-held basic limitation on government power. Under the banner of economic development, all private property," she says, "is now vulnerable to being taken and transferred to another private owner, so long as it might be upgraded, i.e., given to an owner who will use it in a way that the legislature deems more beneficial to the public in the process. To reason, as the court does, that the incidental public benefits resulting from the subsequent ordinary use of private property render economic development takings for public use is to wash out any distinction between private and public use of property, and thereby effectively to delete the words "for public use" from the takings clause of the Fifth Amendment. Accordingly, I respectfully dissent," she says. Now, later on in her opinion, she says, "In moving away from our decision sanctioning the condemnation of harmful property use, the court today significantly expands the meaning of public use. It holds that the sovereign may take private property currently put to ordinary private use and give it over for new ordinary private use, so long as the new use is predicted to generate some secondary benefit for the public, such as increased tax revenue, more jobs, maybe even aesthetic pleasure. But nearly any lawful use of real private property can be said to generate some incidental benefit to the public. Thus, if predicted or even guaranteed, positive side effects are enough to render transfer from one private party to another constitutional, then the words for public use do not realistically exclude any takings." I want to say that again, because I think it's important. She says, "Thus, if predicted, or even guaranteed, positive side effects are enough to render transfer from one private party to another constitutional, then the words for public use do not realistically exclude any takings, and thus do not exert any constraint on the eminent domain power." She goes on to say later on, "The specter of condemnation hangs over all property. Nothing is to prevent the state from replacing any Motel 6 with a Ritz-Carlton, any home with a shopping mall, or any farm with a factory." Well, I don't think you have to worry about factories too much. They're all in Asia. But anyway, she says, finally in a coda, the court suggests that property owners should turn to the states, who may or may not choose to impose appropriate limits on economic development takings. She says, this is an abdication of our responsibility. States play many important functions in our system of dual sovereignty, but compensating for our refusal to enforce properly the federal constitution and a provision meant to curtail state action, no less, is not among them. She says, any property may now be taken for the benefit of another private party, but the fallout from this decision will not be random. The beneficiaries are likely to be those citizens with disproportionate influence and power in the political process, including large corporations and development firms. As for the victims, the government now has license to transfer property from those with fewer resources to those with more. The founders cannot have intended this perverse result, she says. And then she quotes James Madison, quote, that alone is just government, which impartially secures to every man whatever is his own, unquote. And obviously, folks, we no longer have a just government. We no longer have a government that cares about the Constitution. And we certainly do not have a Supreme Court that is looking out for our best interest. This all fits right into the communitarian concept of supplanting the rights of the individual in favor of the rights of the community. And we told you this decision was coming down the pike, and here it is, and I'm sorry to say that the Supreme Court came down on the wrong side of it. And many people are going to pay the price. Many people are going to lose their homes, their livelihoods, and, you know, there's going to be other ramifications. I mean, I'm thinking about businesses, mom-and-pop businesses, maybe businesses that have been in the family for many years. What's going to happen when you have a little mom-and-pop pizzeria, for instance? There comes along a giant, huge corporation that wants that land. And they can generate more jobs. They can generate more revenue for taxes and other things. And they want that land. I can see that this could very well not only eliminate houses in a city, as well as the rural areas, but it could also eliminate small businesses as well. Because the huge businesses will generate more jobs. I mean, this is going to be great for stores like Walmart. I mean, this is their best dream. And of course, Chris very well covered on about the International Trade Corridor. This had to happen in order to fulfill the International Trade Corridor. The thousands and thousands of acres of land that had to be acquired through eminent domain, you're going to have a lot of people who would not sell the land. And there would have been many, many years of court battles to get that land, and now all of that is unnecessary. Now, according to the Supreme Court, hey, if you need it, take it. And I'm very saddened by this incredible blow. I understand it. Many of you understand it. Hopefully all of you understand it. But sadly, most of our Americans, it seems to me, anyway, do not understand the absolute significance of this development. And that's just par for the course. It's just the way it goes. There's other things going on here. I've got some China news tonight. China advances their missile program. Of course, They're launching a bid for Unocal and Maytag, trying to take over American corporations. China's image. We're going to get into all that tonight, as much of this as we can. But first, expanding on the ignorant American idea for a moment, Steve Yates writes in NewsWithViews.com that the globalist's best friend is American ignorance. He says, recently France and the Netherlands dealt the European wing of the globalist establishment a slap in the face. They used the polls to turn thumbs down on the European Union Constitution. They can't rest on their laurels, of course. The idea of a European Union Constitution is not dead, just on hold. The same is true of the long-standing elitist plan to impose a European megastate on the once separate nations of the region. This whole affair testifies to the disparity in thought between the elites and the voting populations, and how little the former understand the latter. Copies of the EU Constitution were distributed to every household in France, all 300 or so pages of it. A lot of the French likely read it. Perhaps they read the second paragraph of the preface, which states, quote, the convention was asked to draw up proposals on three subjects: how to bring citizens closer to the European design and European institutions, how to organize politics and the European political area in an enlarged union, and how to develop the union as a stabilizing factor and a model in the New World Order, unquote. There's that phrase again, he says. I continue to marvel at those who believe we conspiracy theory types. Just imagine all this stuff. Perhaps the citizens of France and the Netherlands read an agenda that differs little from the UN agenda. Perhaps they read that the EU, quote, shall contribute to peace, security, the sustainable development of the earth, solidarity and mutual respect among peoples, free and fair trade, eradication of poverty, and protection of human rights, in particular children's rights, as well as to strict observance and development of international law, including respect for the principles of the United Nations Charter, unquote. What an intellectually confused recipe for a sprawling, ever-expanding leviathan of unelected globalcrats micromanaging everyone and everything in sight. Or, finally, perhaps the French and Dutch read that under the Article 10 in this New World Order, quote, the Constitution and law adopted by the Union's institutions in exercising competences conferred upon it shall have primacy over the laws of the member states, unquote. And that, quote, member states shall take all appropriate measures, general or particular, to ensure fulfillment of the obligations flowing from the Constitution or resulting from Union institutions' acts, unquote. There you have it, the sovereignty-destroying element of the EU Constitution. The French and Dutch read it, and they responded appropriately at the polls. It is not as if their nations don't have immense problems. The French have a huge unemployment rate, and the Dutch have embraced euthanasia. The dominant economic systems in Europe are essentially socialist. They would prefer the term social democrat, of course. European culture is dying rapidly, if it isn't already dead, but the French and Dutch value their sovereignty and voted to preserve it from the globalists. He says, I suppose one must start somewhere. Meanwhile, I wonder if Americans would do the same if confronted with a Western Hemispheric constitution in the world envisioned by our wing of the globalist establishment. The Europeans are ahead of us on the world government track. But with the huge push to approve CAFTA at the top of the globalist agenda here, we are rapidly catching up. And in America, we have a handicap the Europeans don't have. Back in January, he says, I was conversing with a man in the singles group of the church I'd begun attending here in Greenville. I was explaining some of my writing and what I thought the primary threats to this nation are. As I enumerated, he asked me, what's sustainable development? Now, just last weekend, the same person asked me, what is the real ID bill? That's the problem, my friends, in a nutshell. Unlike Europeans, relatively few Americans read except for entertainment. Their primary interests are money and sports. Most do not follow current events that are not affecting them directly and immediately. The few who do are unaware of what is not covered by the mainstream media. So they can't tell you what sustainable development is. They've never heard of Agenda 21. CAFTA, I can almost hear someone saying, has that got something to do with NASCAR? Few Americans today can tell you that there even is a European Union Constitution. A sizable fraction of school to work educated college and university students cannot find Europe on a map. Suppose a printed copy of the final version of CAFTA was sent to every household in America. Would Americans read it? My guess is no. They would gasp at the size of the thing, and it might make a good doorstop. Again, I almost hear some college-trained yuppie muttering, I think I'll wait for the movie version. Movies are more passive, of course. To read any document, you actually have to focus your mind. He says, I've encountered folks who maintain what I'm sure they believe is safe non-involvement with politics. I always respond with a quote, just because you don't take an interest in politics doesn't mean politics won't take an interest in you. The globalists are indeed interested in us. To use author Terry Hayfield's terms, there is a permanent revolution going on all around us, and its goal is to transform every institution in this country. The power elites behind it regard most of us as little more than beasts of burden to be moved about by various forms of coercion. That most government-schooled Americans are blissfully ignorant of this fact is the elite's best friend right now. I want to say that again. He said, the globalists are indeed interested in us. To use author Terry Hayfield's term, there is a permanent revolution going on all around us, and its goal is to transform every institution in this country. The power elites behind it regard most of us as little more than beasts of burden to be moved about by various forms of coercion. That most government-schooled Americans are blissfully ignorant of this fact is the elite's best friend right now. This is because there is one thing that we can be sure of. In their quest for regional integration, eventually world government, they will not quit. They will not walk off with their heads down and their tails between their legs just because they got their noses bloodied this one time in Europe. As far back as the early Fabian Society in the 1880s, the Rhodes Milner Round Table Groups in the 1890s, and the Rockefeller-founded General Education Boards of the 1900s, the power elites have been engaging in this long-term thinking and strategic planning. Discussions among those in the Anglo-American establishment on how best to undermine national sovereignty go back decades. Meanwhile, the majority of Americans are thinking about baseball. Next fall's football season, Paris Hilton, Desperate Housewives, or the next installment of Survivor. Even most of those who consider themselves well-informed and involved focus on the next election, the next quarterly report, or the next rise or dip in the stock market. High time preference and short-term bliss work to the advantage of long-term planners. And that's precisely the problem. He says, so the globalists will be back in Europe, perhaps with a revised EU constitution, perhaps with something else. And it is clear that even if we manage to stop a favorable vote on CAFTA, any day now, that too will return, possibly buried inside some larger ominous omnibus package, as was Real ID, where it will slip past America's sleeping masses without any significant discussion. In that case, what is accomplished? What the French and Dutch did was buy themselves some time. If we stop CAFTA this year, we will delay the FTAA. That buys us some time. As our job base continues to erode alongside our property rights, and as we move toward national ID, maybe, just maybe, a critical mass of Americans will unplug from the real matrix, wake up and become educated about the threats to this nation that don't involve terrorism. And certainly, that is very well stated by Stephen Yates. That's precisely the problem. We're distracted by everything in sight. There's a million distractions that they give to us to keep us off course. Oil prices, they're saying now that oil prices could go up to $70 a barrel.
The price of oil has soared almost 60% over the past year. For the second time this week, crude briefly cracked $60 a barrel in the trading pits.
And unless there's a major drop-off in demand between now and the end of the year, $70 a barrel oil is not out of the question.
$70 a barrel oil, according to Phil Flynn of Alerian Trading Corporation. $70 a barrel oil, and Americans are sleeping on. We've covered in the past that there is no oil shortage. Lindsey Williams was on this broadcast. He predicted oil was going to continue to climb. We have no shortage of oil. Oil is plentiful. And China is swallowing up a lot of it. We're going to cover some of the China information when we get back from the break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks. Stay with us as we go to break. We have a lot more information to cover on the other side. Stay with us, folks.
FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
America is at war right now. It's not a war against Iraq, nor is it a war against terrorism. It's a new war for our independence. At stake is our Constitution and the very freedoms we enjoy every day. You see, power-hungry politicians are quietly advancing something deceptively named the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA. Proponents claim they are merely promoting trade by turning North and South America into a huge economic union. But in reality, it's a brazen scheme to eliminate the authority of the U.S. government, submitting our nation to the whims of a new regional superpower. America as we value it will steadily disappear, as will our rights, our Constitution, and our freedoms. Help win the war against the FTAA. Go to stoptheftaa.org and help keep America free. That's stoptheftaa.org.
Again, I want to tell the American people, we're doing everything we can at home, but you better have a president who chases these terrorists down and bring them to justice before they hurt us again.
Everybody looking, there's a new bad way in town.
We must deal with threats before they fully materialize.
Hop on the board and let the wind carry you around.
And the other lesson is that there are people who can't stand what America stands for.
Desire to inflict great harm on the American people.
We cannot let terrorists
us and rogue nations. Hold this nation hostile or hold our allies hostile. This is a global effort. We're facing a group of folks who have such hatred in their heart, they'll strike anywhere with any means. And that's why it's essential that we have strong alliances, and we do.
There are some who feel like that if they attack us, that we may decide to leave prematurely. They don't understand what you're talking about, those kids.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you. Time to restore chaos. Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we.
Broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks. As we continue on here, as our military chases around boogeymen all over the world that aren't threats, the real threat is building. And that threat is Communist China. Roger Canfield writes in his book, China's Trojan Horses, after talking in some detail about the attack of the USS Cole. He says, in the shadow of the bloody light of the coal tragedy and the Red Chinese forcing down of an American reconnaissance plane and holding American crewmen hostage, he says, we focus on greater, perhaps dull detail in unappreciated espionage and terrorist threats. These threats to life, liberty, and property of Americans are seen not just in the Middle East and not just in the South China Sea, but in our own homeland. The FBI admits that U.S. vulnerability, specifically at seaports, is high. The National Intelligence Council of the CIA warns of asymmetrical attacks upon the U.S. homeland. The threat is Red China. China's potential agents are PRC citizens, overseas Chinese and others with easy access to our open and free society. These agents are Chinese soldiers, sailors, students, scientists, and spies. Every day they enjoy unchallenged access to America's most vital military, industrial, and infrastructure facilities. Did you hear that? China's potential agents are PRC citizens, overseas Chinese and others with easy access to our open and free society. He says these agents are China's soldiers, sailors, students, scientists, and spies. Every day they enjoy unchallenged access to America's most vital military, industrial, and infrastructure facilities. We will emphasize one stunning vulnerability, the dangerous presence of the China Ocean Shipping Company, or COSCO, with 100 container vessels in the USA calling on some major U.S. seaport every day. Recently, GeostrategyDirect.com reported, quote, the PLA, or the People's Liberation Army, conducted exercises on converting commercial container ships to join the war effort. The People's Liberation Army demonstrated for the first time in public how it can convert commercial freighters into warships. Unquote. The internet site of an official Chinese Communist Party newspaper said, quote, to meet the demand of future wars and give play to the formidable power of heavy guns, on 10th of August, a certain PLA unit in Zhuhai, under the Nanjing military region, successfully conducted for the first time an exercise with live ammunition on the certain sea area of Huanghai, located in the northern part of the Jiangsu province, by deploying heavy caliber guns on a container ship formerly used in ocean-going coastal marine transport. During the exercise, the traditional gun position was moved from the land to the deck of a large container ship. Unquote. COSCO, the merchant marine of the PLA, has 600 container ships alone. COSCO's CEO, Wai Jiefu, dismisses claims of a military mission. He says he is not an admiral and his only marching orders are to make profits. In 1991, Huo Zhaowen, Wang Zhongzhio, I can't pronounce these names, I'm sorry folks, of the China National Defense Science and Technology Information Center in Beijing wrote Sources and Methods of Attaining National Defense Science and Technology. Openly distributed in China for nearly 10 years, the untranslated report was first published in English in the Far Eastern Economic Review in 2000. Western intelligence sources called it incredible and astonishing as late as 2000, despite a several thousand year history of intelligence as a common instrument of statecraft. The book details how agents should obtain military technology, especially from America, by accessing open and secret sources. Indeed, more than 80% of all Chinese spying focuses on open source material obtained from government and business publications. The Chinese report states it is also necessary to stress that there is still 20% or less of our intelligence that must come through the collection of information using special means such as reconnaissance satellites, electronic eavesdropping, and the activities of special agents purchasing or stealing, etc. Among this 20% not available from open sources, the Chinese found person-to-person exchange to be very useful, such as eliciting information from scientists at meetings through documents supplied by agents. Perhaps with less astonishment, recently the National Counterintelligence Center of the CIA warned federal agencies and private firms to be aware of Red Chinese attempts to steal technology by recruiting their scientists. The vice president of the Chinese Academy of Science has said China is seeking scientists of Chinese nationality willing to abandon their citizenship. Red Chinese opportunities for recruiting agents abound in the U.S. Red China targets Chinese citizens studying or working in the U.S. as well as Chinese Americans. Red China is interested obsessively in people of Chinese-American ancestry to the exclusion of other people, says a former director of the FBI's Chinese counterintelligence, Paul Moore. Many Chinese-Americans may freely provide information in absolute and complete innocence. As engineers, scientists, and mathematicians, proud of their knowledge and achievements. Some may feel especially privileged to share their achievements with others of like interests and ethnic background. Everywhere, Americans of all ethnic background greet visitors from Red China with the effective friendliness born only in the USA. Like their brothers at Los Alamos, U.S. technical experts routinely show everything to visitors from China about critical infrastructures without passing a thought about security. Chinese visitors lumped in with Australians, Egyptians, Vietnamese, and Koreans are shown the engineering details and the locations of California's most critical water, communications, and energy infrastructures. Why? To the naive and well-meaning, to not do so would be unfriendly. Security is little understood and poorly implemented, even after the evidence appears indisputable. From April 25th through May 11th, 2001, Chinese hackers routed through China Telecom, breached the security on the computer system at the California Independent System Operator, or ISO, in Folsom, California. The ISO controls California's vulnerable electricity grid. A source told Dan Moraine at Los Angeles Times that it was a, quote, "it was very close to a catastrophic breach," unquote. During one of the cyber attacks on May 7th to 8th, some 400,000 households lost their electricity. Yet Cal ISO officials said that there was no connection between the hacking and the outages. We'll have to take their word for it. The attack revealed grievous security lapses. There were no firewalls, tripwires, or logs to frustrate hackers or to record the security breach. Dozens of computer ports were wide open to easy access. During May 2001, hundreds of other computer attacks upon the USA originated in China. During the attacks, some suggested to state officials that the attacks might indicate a Chinese interest in the vulnerability of other critical infrastructures, such as the dams and aqueducts that provide water to tens of millions of Californians. Indeed, Chinese visitors to California's state water project operation centers, dams, pumps, and power plants outnumber those of any other nation. State officials believed their systems were secure and that the policy was that the state of California remained open to the public. Chinese attacks on computers controlling California's electric grid did not warrant heightened security in other infrastructures. Though there are widespread security lapses, California officials, far from the nation's center of defense and intelligence, ought not to be singled out. They do not believe national security is a primary function of state government and do not perceive major security threats. Security lapses like rotting fish start from the head. I.C. Smith, a retired FBI agent who specialized in Chinese spying, said the FBI cutback on counterintelligence against the Chinese during the Clinton administration was a short-sighted view of the PRC, a view held by those with little intellectual capacity for counterintelligence, and it's a view that China doesn't pose a threat. He said, after all, they aren't out there making dead drops, communicating via shortwave radio, and it goes on. But at any point, ladies and gentlemen, that's Roger Canfield in his book, China's Trojan Horses. We went into Iraq because we were told that Saddam Hussein was a threat. We have continued to do business for many, many years now with China. And China is becoming a threat, and has been a threat all along. And it's gotten more and more aggressive as time has gone on, and now we see from the Washington Times, Bill Gertz writes that China has successfully flight-tested a submarine-launched missile that U.S. officials say marks a major advance in Beijing's long-range nuclear program. A U.S. official familiar with reports of the test said, quote, "This is a significant milestone in their effort to develop strategic weapons," unquote. U.S. intelligence agencies monitored the flight test of a JL-2 missile about 10 days ago, officials said. The missile was launched from a Chinese submarine near the port of Qingdao and was tracked to a desert impact point in western China several thousand miles away, the officials said. The Air Force's National Air Intelligence Center reported that the JL-2 will, quote, for the first time allow Chinese missile submarines to target portions of the United States from operating areas located near the Chinese coast, unquote. Now, who's paying for this? We're paying for it. We're paying for it by doing business with China. And we hear Rumsfeld making noises about how, oh, they're so worried that China is such a threat. China is such a danger. We created this beast in the first place. How insane is that? Meanwhile, we have China trying to take over our oil companies now. And our Maytag appliance maker. Sinook, C-N-O-O-C, launches bid for Unocal takeover. This is from the China Daily. China's largest offshore oil and gas producer, Sinook Limited, yesterday signaled a takeover battle with Chevron by offering $18.5 billion, all cash, an all-cash bid for Unocal, the United States' ninth largest oil and gas producer. If successful, Sinook's bid will be the largest ever overseas acquisition by a Chinese firm. This country, if we don't do something, is going to be steamrolled by the communist Chinese. Here we see China to fill petroleum reserve this year. This is also from China Daily. China will start filling its first strategic petroleum reserve this year, China Central Television said Thursday amid efforts to ensure energy supplies for the country's booming economy. So China continues to build, the U.S. continues to deplete itself. And that is for a reason. This country has got to go broke for the globalists to be able to accomplish what they want. National security gives way to global security. The New World Order. A global police force. That's what our military is today. A global police force. That's why we're on these witch hunts around the world. That's why we went into Iraq. That's why... I was just reading today, just a moment ago. Here we see from Al Jazeera, the U.S. war with Iran has already begun. They say Americans, along with the rest of the world, are starting to wake up to the uncomfortable fact that President George Bush not only lied to them about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but also about the very process that led to war. President Bush told the American people that I have not ordered the use of force. I hope that the use of force will not become necessary. We know now that this statement was itself a lie, that the president, by late August 2002, had in fact signed off on the executive orders authorizing the U.S. military to begin active military operations inside Iraq. And, folks, why do we have an executive order dictatorship in the first place? Why is George W. Bush able to be a commander-in-chief at any time with executive order? Could it be the endless states of emergency that are declared and we're in a perpetual state of war at any time? He continues. These orders were being implemented as early as September 2002 when the U.S. Air Force, assisted by the British Royal Air Force, began expanding its bombardment of targets inside and outside the so-called no-fly zone in Iraq. These operations were designed to degrade Iraqi air defense and command and control capabilities. They also paved the way for the insertion of U.S. Special Operations units who were conducting strategic reconnaissance and later direct action operations against specific targets inside Iraq prior to the 19th of March 2003 commencement of hostilities. Skipping down here. He says, as with Iraq, the president has paved the way for the conducting of the American public and an all-too-compliant media to accept at face value the merits of a regime change policy regarding Iran, linking the regime of the mullahs, or as George W. Bush called them, the mullahs, to an axis of evil, together with the newly liberated Iraq and North Korea, and speaking of the absolute requirement for the spread of quote-unquote democracy in the Iranian people, to the Iranian people. Liberation and the spread of democracy have become a none-too-subtle code word within the neocon cabal that formulates and executes American foreign policy today for militarism and war. By the intensity of the liberation-slash-democracy rhetoric alone, Americans should be put on notice that Iran is well fixed in the crosshairs as the next target for the illegal policy of regime change being implemented by the Bush administration, and I would add, all of it being laid out in advance, a full year before the new Pearl Harbor, September 11th. It was published in September 2000, the PNAC report, Rebuilding America's Defenses. And they followed it to a T so far, and it calls for democratization of China. So somebody want to tell me there's not going to be a war with China? I don't believe it. The China threat continues. Here we see from China Daily again. China image scores better than U.S. The United States image is so tattered overseas 2 years after the Iraq invasion that China is viewed more favorably than the U.S. in Western countries, an international poll found. What a surprise. The United States is being made to look like the bad guy all around the world by our government, who are one and the same with the globalists. 11 of the 16 countries surveyed by the Pew Research Center, Britain, France, Germany, Spain, and the Netherlands, Russia, Turkey, Pakistan, Lebanon, Jordan, Indonesia, had a more favorable view of China than the U.S. India and Poland were more upbeat about the U.S., while Canadians are as likely to see China favorably as they were the United States. And that, my friends, is incredibly sad. Here we see from CNN, U.S. aid to North Korea, not enough. The United States has said it would provide 50,000 tons of food aid to North Korea, but the World Food Program, which is an arm of the UN, by the way, said it was not enough to meet the desperate need of the people. Well, why are we giving food to North Korea in the first place? This is a country we're talking about bombing. This is a country we're talking about going to war with, and yet we're sending them food. How generous of us. And I got news for you, ladies and gentlemen. The World Food Program says it's not enough. You need to give more. Just like we need to do more in Africa. We need to spend around the world until Americans have nothing. That's when it'll be enough. When you need aid. Well, Americans need aid right now. Americans are almost ready to lose their homes. Some of them are losing their homes. Bankruptcies are at record numbers. People can hardly afford to put food on their table and get to work every day because of the high gas prices. And yet our worldwide giving is not enough. What a load of garbage. MSNBC reports that Halliburton wins a contract with Europe. Halliburton, which is the vice president's former company that he used to be CEO of. He's no longer CEO, but yet these media reports don't seem to mention, I'm sure the guy still has stock in the company. How many shares of Halliburton does Dick Cheney still have? Another motive for the endless warring that goes on. Dr. Carolyn Dean writes in newswithviews.com, kiss your vitamins goodbye. I wanted to get into some of that. It's about Codex Alimentarius. I don't think we're going to have time tonight, unfortunately. Dennis sends me this about, he says, thought you might be able to use this. It was posted on June 22nd. Just another step in a backdoor Kyoto. I've made the point here, folks, that I believe that now that they have not so far been able to ratify the Kyoto Protocol, I think it's being implemented regulatorily. And he sends me this article, U.S. Senate adopts voluntary measures to curb greenhouse gas emissions. It comes from Dennis. It's a Yahoo News article. It says the Senate overwhelmingly adopted legislation that would encourage U.S. businesses to voluntarily reduce emissions of greenhouse gases produced from burning fossil fuels. The measure introduced by Senator Chuck Hagel, part of a broader energy bill being debated in the Senate this week, was adopted by a vote of 66-29. The amendment would authorize federal loans for companies developing techniques designed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It would authorize the U.S. State Department to provide assistance to developing countries that target greenhouse gas emissions. Why do we have the State Department helping developing countries? Because we have a worldwide UN system that the State Department is a part of. The United States is one of the biggest emitters, they always point out, of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, which are blamed for depleting the Earth's ozone layer, which filters the sun's harmful rays. You notice how these articles always point out that we're the biggest polluter, the biggest emitter. We're the biggest emitter of carbon dioxide. First of all, carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. Carbon dioxide is plant food. Plants need it to eat, to grow, to give off oxygen. That's a fact of science. The more carbon dioxide you have in the atmosphere, the greener the earth becomes, the more oxygen plants give off. Carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. So that's the first thing. The second thing, they're very quick to point out that we emit more greenhouse gases. What they don't seem to remember is that the United States is the biggest country that feeds the world. We supply more of everything to the rest of the world than anybody else, except for, of course, things that are produced as far as industry is concerned. I don't think we're the largest industrial country anymore. I also have another thing here from Dennis. A joint resolution from the state of Rhode Island implementing the concept of sustainable development. This was from 2000. I don't have time to read this. We got to go. We're out of time. But folks, I pray that you do your research and certainly pray for this republic and do what you can to restore it. I'll be back on Monday. Join me then. God bless you and good night.
Shadows are falling and I'm running out of breath. Heart for a while. If I leave you, it doesn't mean I love you any less. Keep me in your heart for a while. When you get up in the morning and you see that crazy sun, keep me in your heart for a while. There's a train leaving nightly called